Money and markets. The Feds took a pass on raising interest rates. That proves that there is softness. They described it as temporary softness. They said they expect two more bumps. That leaves the Fed funds rate at a 0.75% to 1% target. They are continuing to reinvest their balance. I see that as more important than what they're doing with the Fed funds rate, because the Fed fund rate is really going to follow the market. Keeping the money rolling over on their balance sheet is more important, and I truly suspect that there's a great deal of fraudulent securities in that portfolio. So I'm very suspicious of, you know, whether or not they were doing things like buying paper from Wells Fargo. Anyway, they described the slowing in the first quarter as transitory. I'm still not quite clear on why they see that, because if you look at the all sorts of symptoms going on, there's real fear about what's happening in the economy, and I think that's part of the push for the tax reform in bill and the way that it's coming forward. So let's take a look at the markets. The U.S. dollar is still a bit soft for the year. It's down 3% using UUP, the dollar ETF, U.S. dollar bullish ETF. The bond aggregate is up 1.5%. The 20-year long treasury ETF really recovered. It was significantly down. Now it's up 3%, and the intermediate up 1.93%. My old friend Junk keeps baffling me. That's up 3.57%. Everybody who's invested in Junk has been steadily right throughout this bull market, and I keep shaking my head. The U.S. equity market's still in their strong bull trend. The S&P now up 10.89% for the year. Home builders up more, 13.44%. And the if you look at aerospace, the home builders are even outpacing aerospace. So you can tell inflation is really taking hold. Real estate ETF down up 2.69%, lagging. Commercial not doing as well right now as residential. If we look at Europe is very strong. Germany up almost 13%. Switzerland up 14%. You can tell there's a lot of happiness among the establishment about where the French elections are. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then you have the developed markets away from North America up 11%, and the emerging markets come back strong at 15%. They had come back down as of last week, but they're really coming back strong. China small caps is up 11%, and the large caps up 10%. And India flying, you can tell the establishment's happy about the war on cash. A lot of pain there, but the India ETF up 20.44%. Gold and silver have backed up a bit. Silver now up 3% for the year, so that's come down a bit. And gold up a little bit, close to 7.5%. So as we can see, the equity markets continue to be very, very strong. And, you know, there's an old saying that a bull market climbs a wall of worry. And I've never seen equity markets that have climbed this kind of wall of worry. It's quite extraordinary. But they continue. The trend continues to be a bull one. As I said, the French elections, the establishment is breathing a sigh of relief. We had the debates last night, and Macron is 59% and to 41% Le Pen, so almost 20 points in the lead, and that's very significant because the voting is on Sunday, so we're just 3 days away from the vote. The State Department has put out alert on Europe through September, and it's amazing how many people I know in the United States consider Europe a very dangerous place to travel. You know, I can't imagine where they're getting this, and I'm very suspicious. But with the State Department putting out an alert on the safety travel advisory on Europe, I put a link up on the website so you can link to it. If you've ever traveled a lot in Europe, it's so much safer than traveling in the United States. I travel in both places a lot, and I think the State Department should put out an alert on Chicago. I talked a lot in the annual wrap-up about controlled demolitions and re-engineering and how, in many aspects, we can't continue to kick the can in the economy. And sure enough, everywhere you turn in the news, it's just the story of controlled demolitions and re-engineering. If you haven't read that part of the wrap-up, it's a good grounding for watching all the news. We're going to be seeing this roll out for years. Puerto Rico, the largest local government bankruptcy filing, it's obviously it's not a state, but it is a commonwealth. They have approximately $70 billion of debt. It's a very ugly story. Texas passed legislation to overhaul the Houston pension funds. And again, we're seeing state and local governments now struggle and face the music on the pension funds. And that story has just begun. It's going to continually roll out. And again, we're going to be dealing with this for years, particularly because in the healthcare side, the federal and state government are struggling with healthcare. And to a certain extent, that's a much bigger non-funded hole than many of the retirement systems. And then, of course, in reengineering, the Congress and the Trump administration kicked the can with a spending bill that moves the debt limit out until the end of this budget period. The new budget, of course, in the federal fiscal year will start on October 1st. It was a $1 trillion spending bill, and there's a lot of frustration on both sides of the aisle. Many of Trump's supporters very unhappy with the compromises that had to be made. To a certain extent, the first real Trump administration budget is the 2018 budget. That's what he created a blueprint for in March, and his full budget is proposal is coming out in May. To a certain extent, I really do believe we're watching a global armaments expo and air show as part of the hullabaloo to really increase the military budget, because his proposal is, not to re-engineer engineer the military and to give them a big raise, and not to mention the $6.5 trillion that went missing in their last financial statements, which was fiscal 2015. So it's really a complete, to me, abrogation of the philosophy that he was elected on. And if you look at our first quarter report card that we did for the Trump administration, he got a D plus on the budget. And if that doesn't change, you're going to see an F. In fact, I put up a commentary this week called That Pesky Constitution, with links to a lot of the information on the missing money. And it was inspired by Trump's comments about the Constitution, which shows his frustration. But the reality is, what needs to happen is we need to bring transparency to the money and bring the money into compliance with the law. So if we can move illegal immigrants into compliance with the law, maybe we should move Congress and the executive branch into compliance with the law. It's interesting to look. If you look at, I've been reading announcements from Duterte from the Philippines, who's doing very radical stuff and throwing out all sorts of multinational interests and dealing unbelievably aggressively and very forcefully with the narcotics trafficking. He can do what he's doing because he has more than 80% approval. Putin in Russia has more than 80% approval. Trump is completely stalemated because he's got about 40% approval. And frankly, that means Congress will not support him, because they think supporting him means they won't get elected next time. So the challenge for the challenge for all of Washington is, how do you get the general population and the deep state to both agree to a solution? And the deep state spends a lot of money trying to build divide and conquer throughout the country. And as I've always told you, I live in a very segregated community. And when I first got here, I used to say to the two sides of black and white, if you just collaborate about the money, you could hate each other rich instead of hating each other poor. Anyway, but the divide and conquer has really worked here in a way that it hasn't worked in Russia and the Philippines. It's quite remarkable how intelligent the general population is there about what they need to do to support the pro-decentralization team. Ryan and the White House both think they can get a health bill done shortly, so the House will vote tomorrow, Thursday. This health bill has really bounced around in the sausage factory of democracy. And it's going to be very hard reconciling the results with the international standards and tax reform. You have a whole bunch of industries that are not willing to be reasonable, and the general population, in many respects, not willing to be reasonable. And so my concern with both the healthcare bill and what they do with tax reform, the danger is you're gonna be able to get through what's good for the wealthy and not what's good for the general population. That's particularly true if you get if you cancel the estate tax and get a corporate tax change. And so, you know, this could come out of the sausage factory looking pretty bad. In the middle of all of this, Apple, it was pointed out in the press that Apple now has $256 billion of cash. It was purported by some of the British press to be more than the governments of U.S. and Canada. I would say not really. That's just looking at the general fund. It's not looking at all the different reserve funds and what's around. But nevertheless, Tim Cook announced today very cleverly that $1 billion was going to be set aside for a venture fund on to be invested in companies focused on advanced technology manufacturing. Very politically smart. Also could be, if they do it properly, could be a very great investment, very smart thing for Apple to do. I would bet on, even though it's $1 billion, it's only 0.39% of their free cash. But that, as I said, that is an area of great investment. And if you look at how the buyback stocks have been performing, the clear message from the market is the market will not thank you for buybacks. They want dividends or you to find good things to invest your cash in. But it is a real comment on centralization that $250 billion of cash is sitting around and can't find anything to do. George Friedman, the founder and now left Stratfor, he has created his own new firm, had a long piece this week for subscribers on Afghanistan, basically saying there's no point in putting people into Afghanistan. We have destroyed the nation, but clearly we can't build nations. And it's a very important point to be made about the whole neocon strategy. You run around the world destroying things, but when you're through destroying them, it could take centuries to build it back, and you certainly can't do it. If you have any wonder about how this all works, watch Charlie Ferguson's wonderful documentary on the Iraq occupation called No End in Sight. It's remarkably and very well done. But it reminds me of the quote I put up in one of the recent commentaries on this topic from General Colin Powell: you break it, you own it. And so there's talk now about putting more boots on the ground in Afghanistan. And Friedman just said, look, it's a money pit. It won't work. What's interesting is you now have all sorts of private interests, including in the poppy fields, that for obvious reasons don't want to give up. It was interesting. I heard, I was listening to Alex Jones this week, and he was describing special forces coming back from Africa, complaining that they were only being used to simply loot in Africa. And that's what we're looking at. We're looking at, unfortunately, wholesale looting. Anyway, there is danger because there is real pressure to put boots on the ground in Syria and Afghanistan and other places in the Middle East. It looks so far as though Trump is resisting. The question I keep having, and we talked about the Saker, so I won't get into it tonight, is what is the goal? I continue to think there's intelligence about what's going on that we are missing. If you look at the number of different nations who have troops in Syria, it's mind-boggling, and it's particularly mind-boggling that the war continues despite all of this. So there's a real story here, and I continue to believe we're missing a part of what we need to know to understand it. The war games that are occurring inside and around the Trump administration are very significant. If you look at what's happening, the establishment is significantly taking out all of the media capacity that was instrumental to getting Trump elected. So we now see O'Reilly out of Fox and then Bill Shine out of Fox. That means Ailes, O'Reilly, and Bill Shine. So here's a group of people who built Fox into the top TV or the cable news, and with three or four of the top five shows, and literally being fired for it. It's a very interesting comment on how the economics of news is not news. It's the other interests of the owners. Anyway, then we see Jim DeMint out of the Heritage Foundation, and according to all the news reports, his number one sin was helping the Trump administration. Of course, we have Flynn out at national security. That happened a while ago, but we now have Bannon in the corner and increasingly Conway in the corner. Lee Stranahan is out of Breitbart, and I'm getting reports from the independent media that they, what had happened to a lot of independent media is they had built a business around ad revenues from Google and flow from Google and Facebook. And as a result, they've been cut off, and now, you know, there's all sorts of effort by Google and Facebook and the social media to discourage flow coming to them, and certainly no revenues. And so it's been very devastating for their business model. It's one of the reasons that from the beginning I avoided Google and Facebook. At one point, one subscriber finally talked to me many years ago on trying Facebook. We got up to about 1,300 friends and then got hacked, and I said, that's it, I'm off of Facebook. So I don't like taking ads. I like getting paid by the people who I want to create value for. So it's much more direct and simple. But needless to say, independent media has been really hurt tremendously. So if you look across the board of all the different players who really helped the Trump effort, it looks to me like they're all being moved aside. And it's amazing how quietly it's being done. It's not getting a lot of attention and a lot of interest. And I'm amazed that the president is not interceding and letting it happen. It's a real mistake. If you can't protect your lieutenants, then ultimately they come and get you. I think part of the switch at Fox is that the strategy is to get in much younger people and be able to pitch the millennials and use the millennials to basically, in the budget game, pull the rug out from under the boomers, because the way to solve some of the budget issues is to just basically, you know, if you've stolen all the money, just say, oh, well, it's, you know, the boomers were wasteful, they don't deserve it, blah, 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 blah. And you basically use your resources to pitch and win the millennials. And it looks to me like that's all part of pulling the rug out from under the sort of more nationalistic group and pull the rug out from under Trump. The question is, when are they going to go in for the kill? Is it going to be on the congressional election? Is it going to be 4 years from now? Or is it going to be when the spending deal's up or before the spending deal's up and they try and go for impeachment? There's a whole lot of players who'd love to get a switch into Pence. There's no doubt about it. So we're just going to have to see and play it by ear. There was one of the, I think it was CNN or MSNBC, somebody had a big editorial today on why Trump has proved he's incompetent. It's time for him to go. So that drumbeat may be starting now that they've got all their players out of Fox and they've got Jim DeMint out of Heritage. I don't think that they're going to get very far. Certainly until and unless the military gets what they want on the, you know, across the board. I think the military is going to be loath to see Trump go, but we'll have to see. It's very, very fluid situation. So I had a great talk with one ally today who was telling me that they didn't like Trump because he was so mean. And basically my opinion is that when Bush and Obama give the banks $27 trillion and $11.5 trillion be stolen, that's mean. So I don't care that Obama's polite and gracious and has a nice style, because to me, mean is when you steal my money. So, you know, I'll take Trump's attitude any day over somebody who steals $27 trillion from the American taxpayers.